very good afternoon to you all. You're listening to The Global Voice, and it's time once again for What's Cooking. I hope I find you all well, and we have a full packed programme as usual. So, what's cooking? Today we're going to talk about British cuisine. What cuisine? I hear you ask. Yes, all right, I know. But listen and learn, because yes, we do have a wide and varied cuisine in Britain today. No more do we suffer under the image of grey boiled meat. After years of disparagement by various countries, especially the French, Britain now has an enviable culinary reputation. In fact, some of the great chefs now come from Britain, I kid you not. However, Britain's culinary expertise is not new. In the past, British cooking was amongst the best in the world. Mrs. Beaton is still one of the renowned writers of cookery books. Her creations have now gained international popularity years after her death. Traditional British cuisine is substantial, yet simple and wholesome. We have long believed in four meals a day. Our fare has been influenced by the traditions and tastes from different parts of the British Empire. Teas from Ceylon and chutney, kedgeree and mulligatawny soup from India. British cuisine has always been multicultural, a potpourri of eclectic styles. In ancient times, influenced by the Romans, and in medieval times, the French. When the Frankish Normans invaded, they brought with them the spices of the East: cinnamon, saffron, mace, nutmeg, pepper, ginger. Sugar came to England at that time and was considered a spice, rare and expensive. Before the arrival of cane sugars, honey and fruit juices were the only sweeteners. The few medieval cookery books that remain record dishes that use every spice in the larder, and chefs across Europe saw their task to be the almost alchemical transformation of raw ingredients into something entirely new. For centuries, the English aristocracy ate French food, which they felt distinguished them from the peasants. During Victorian times, good old British stodge, mixed with exotic spices from all over the empire. And today, despite being part of Europe, we've kept up with our links with the countries of the former British Empire, now united under the Commonwealth. One of the benefits of having an empire is that we did learn quite a lot from the colonies. From East Asia, China, we adopted tea and exported the habit to India. And from India, we adopted curry-style spicing. We even developed a line of spicy sauces, including ketchup, mint sauce, Worcestershire sauce, and devilled sauce, to indulge these tastes. Today, it would be fair to say that curry has become a national dish. In the late 1980s, disenchanted with the overblown and undernourished nouvelle cuisine, chefs began to look a little closer to home for inspiration, calling on a rich and largely ignored tradition and utilising many diverse and interesting ingredients. The basis was formed for what is now known as modern British food. Roast beef is still the national culinary pride. It is called a joint and is served at midday on Sunday with roasted potatoes, Yorkshire pudding, two vegetables, a good strong horseradish, gravy and mustard. Fish is still important to the English diet. We are, after all, an island surrounded by some of the richest fishing areas of the world. Dairy cattle are also farmed extensively. England is famous for its creams, butters, and for its sturdy and delicious cheeses, Double Gloucester, Red Leicester, and of course, cheddar. So, what about some of our more interesting dishes? These include beefsteak, oyster, and kidney pudding. Oysters may seem unlikely in this meat pudding, but their great abundance in Victorian age and earlier eras inspired cooks to find ways to incorporate them creatively in many different recipes. This steamed pudding combines the meats with mushrooms, onions, tomatoes, and Worcestershire, then wraps the whole in a suet pastry. Cockaleeky. This Scottish speciality can be classified as a soup or stew. It combines beef, chicken, leeks and prunes to unusual and spectacular ends. Eccles cake. Puff pastry stuffed with a spicy currant filling. Irish stew. An Irish stew always has a common base of lamb, potatoes and onion. It could contain any number of other ingredients depending on the cook. Syllabub. In the 17th century, a milkmaid would send a stream of new warm milk directly from a cow into a bowl of spiced cider or ale. A light curd would form on top with a lovely whey underneath. This, according to Elizabeth David, was the original syllabub. Today's syllabub is more solid. Its origins can also be traced to the 17th century, albeit to the upper classes, and mixes sherry and or brandy, sugar, lemon, nutmeg and double cream into a custard-like dessert or an eggnog-like beverage, depending upon the cook. Trifle. Layers of alcohol-soaked sponge cake alternate with fruit, custard and whipped cream. Some people add jelly. Welsh rabbit or rarebit. Cheese is grated and melted with milk or ale. Pepper, salt, butter and mustard are then added. The mix is spread over toast and baked until the cheese bubbles and becomes brown in appetizing looking splashes. And very nice it is too. The Sunday roast. Every Sunday, thousands of British families sit down together to eat a veritable feast of roasted meat served with roast potatoes, vegetables and other accompaniments. It is a tradition with a long pedigree. In medieval times, the village serfs served the squire for 6 days a week. Sundays, however, were a day of rest, and after the morning church service, serfs would assemble in a field and practice their battle techniques. They were rewarded with mugs of ale and a feast of oxen roasted on a spit. The tradition has survived because the meat can be put in the oven to roast before the family goes to church and be ready to eat when they return. Typical meats for roasting are joints of beef, pork, lamb, or a whole chicken. Any self-respecting Sunday roast should be served with a gravy made from the meat juices. Bubble and squeak. Bubble and squeak, sometimes just called bubble, is a traditional English dish made with the shallow fried leftover vegetables from a Sunday roast dinner. The chief ingredients are potato and cabbage, but carrots, peas, Brussels sprouts and other vegetables can be added. It is usually served with cold meat from the Sunday roast and pickles, but you can eat it on its own. There are various theories as to the origin of its name, one of them being that it is the description of the action and sound made during the cooking process. You can even buy pre-prepared, frozen and tinned versions, but they're pretty disgusting, and they certainly are. The homemade version is the best. So now we come to fish and chips, something that we have spoken about on What's Cooking in a previous programme. Fish and chips is the traditional takeaway food of England. Long before McDonald's, we had the fish and chip shop. Fresh cod is the most common fish for our traditional fish and chips. Other types of fish used include haddock, huss, and plaice. The fresh fish is dipped in flour, then in batter, and deep fried. It is then served with chips, fresh, not frozen. Usually you will be asked if you want salt and vinegar added. Sometimes people will order curry sauce, yellow sauce that tastes nothing like real curry, mushy peas, well, it's green anyway, or pickled eggs. Yes, pickled. Traditionally, fish and chips were served up wrapped in old newspaper. Nowadays, thanks to hygiene laws, they are wrapped in greaseproof paper and sometimes paper that has been specially printed to look like newspaper. You often get a small wooden or plastic fork to eat them with too, although it's quite okay to use your fingers. So, a little bit of history of British cuisine for you there. Now then, how about some recipes? Our first recipe is for ploughman's lunch. And if you've ever been to a British pub, you'll often see this on the menu. Sometimes these days it's on the menu in restaurants and cafes, but most definitely British pubs. So what is a ploughman's lunch? Let's find out.
Now with the ploughman's lunch, we have basic ingredients here that are traditional, and that is crusty bread, pickled onions, the dark ones are best that are pickled in malt vinegar, and mature cheddar cheese. Mild cheddar cheese is not used for a ploughman's lunch. Generally we expect to have mature cheddar cheese. And of course, this is a part of the traditional British pub lunch. You'll come to a pub for lunch and it goes very well with British beer, which is actually ale, as opposed to lager, which is the Australian traditional drink. Ale is a top fermented brew, mainly flavoured with hops. So let's go and have a look at making a traditional ploughman's lunch. Now there are optional things that you can have with a ploughman's lunch as well. You probably see them when you go to a pub, and those are things like egg here, hard-boiled egg, lettuce, tomato, cucumber, just salad items to make, and of course ham. You might get ham on a ploughman's lunch as well, but always usually we have the basic mature cheddar and pickled onions and crusty bread. I cut the bread in chunky slices at an angle here, like this. So that each person, or each portion, consists of one slice cut in half to almost the base, like that. I'll open it up for you there. Just make sure we cut a bit more off that so the camera can see it. And there's the other one. Now we butter those slices. Now I've buttered my slices, and there you can see I've spread the butter thinly. That's about 5 grams to each slice there. Let's cut the cheese. Now cut the cheese into medium-sized slices. There we are, put that like that. Yes, I've got 30 gram of cheese there. I've just weighed that. Now I'm going to place on top of the cheese about 20 gram of sliced pickled onion. Slice it a bit thicker like that so it's crunchy when your guests or your family bite into this. There we are. And that's all it is. A ploughman's lunch should be bread and butter, mature cheddar cheese, and dark pickled onions, big fat ones like that. And put the lid on like that. And let's start on the other one. Now with my second portion of ploughman's lunch, the one that's going to have salad with it, the bread slices are bigger, and so therefore I've cut the same 30 gram of cheese, but cut it more thinly, so I can spread it over the bread, and every bit of bread gets some cheese. Now with this one, I've also taken care to arrange the salad items, because the ploughman's lunch is really a pocket with the ingredients inside the bread. Now there are my two types of ploughman's lunch placed on the table. We have the basic ploughman's lunch here with pickle and cheese, and the more modern ploughman's lunch, I might say, with more salad items on it, such as tomato and cucumber. And there we have them. Now I've got the two types of beer here. This is the lager, which is a bottom fermented brew, and this is a traditional English ale. When you taste the hops, the combination of the hops and the ale, it's a wonderful thing, and it goes perfectly with a ploughman's lunch.
Next up, we have Toad in the Hole, a very filling recipe, and this one serves four. For this, you will need 8 pork sausages, 1 tablespoon vegetable oil, 225 grams, 8 ounces, plain flour, 4 eggs, 250 ml, 8 fluid ounces milk, salt and pepper to taste, and
this is what you do.
1. Preheat the oven to 200 degrees C, gas mark 6. 2. Pour the oil into the bottom of a baking dish and arrange the sausages over it in a single layer. Bake for 10 minutes in the preheated oven. 3. Meanwhile, in a medium bowl, whisk together the flour, eggs, and half of the milk until smooth. Gradually mix in the rest of the milk until a smooth batter is achieved. Season with salt and pepper. 4. Remove the sausages from the oven and ladle the batter over them until the sausages are 3/4 covered. Return to the oven and bake for 35 minutes or until the centre is risen and browned. And actually, although that recipe specifically says pork sausages, you can use whatever sausages you like, turkey sausages, beef sausages, corn sausages even. And I've even known someone make Toad in the Hole with chicken tenders. So, there you go. Next up, we have Cullen Skink. Cullen Skink is a classic Scottish smoked fish soup with velvety leeks and potato, perfectly warming for winter. And for this, you will need, for the stock, 75 grams, 2 ounces butter, 1 tablespoon vegetable oil, 2 leeks roughly chopped, 2 onions peeled and roughly chopped, 2 fennel bulbs roughly chopped, 250 ml, that's 9 fluid ounces white wine, 500 grams, 17 and a half ounces smoked haddock, 750 ml, 1 pint of water. For the soup, 75 grams, 2.5 ounces butter, 1 tablespoon vegetable oil, 2 leeks finely chopped, 2 shallots peeled and finely chopped, 2 garlic cloves peeled and crushed, 300 grams, 10.5 ounces potatoes peeled and chopped, 500 mils, 17.5 fluid ounces double cream, 1 tablespoon finely chopped fresh parsley, a pinch of freshly grated nutmeg, and...
This is what you do.
1. For the stock, heat the butter and vegetable oil in a large pan and gently fry the leeks, onions and fennel for 3 to 4 minutes or until softened. 2. Add the white wine to the pan and bring to the boil. Add the smoked haddock. Pour in the water and bring back to the boil. Reduce the heat and simmer for 30 minutes, skimming off any scum that rises to the surface until the haddock is cooked through. 3. Strain the haddock, reserving the cooking stock. Chop the haddock into bite-sized pieces. 4. For the soup, heat the butter with the vegetable oil and fry the leeks, shallots and garlic for 3 to 4 minutes or until softened. Add the potatoes and the chopped smoked haddock to the pan. 5. Add the reserved cooking stock and bring to the boil, then reduce the heat and simmer for 10 to 15 minutes or until the potatoes are tender. Stir in the cream and briefly blend the soup with a stick blender. 6. Serve the soup with crusty bread and sprinkle with chopped fresh parsley and a sprinkling of fresh nutmeg. Now then, let's make scouse. And I'm going to say no more about it.
Scouse is a traditional Liverpool meal, and it's really, really simple. And there are no hard and fast rules about what you put in it. So I'm just going to give you a basic idea. Because the idea of scouse is to use up leftovers. So if you have some root vegetables that you haven't used in another meal that are left over, put them in. If you've got cuts of beef or lamb that you haven't used and they need using up, put them in. This is the wonderful thing about scouse. Anyway, I'm using some olive oil. There's a cut up onion. There's about a pound of lamb here. I've cut off most of the visible fat. You don't have to. That's just my preference. There's a couple of pounds of carrots here, chopped up. And a couple of pounds of potatoes chopped up. I'm going to add some pearl barley, some salt, some pepper, a couple of bay leaves, and some mixed herbs. And these are little lamb stock cubes, but you could use chicken or beef stock. It doesn't really matter. So I'm going to get a frying pan and add about a tablespoon of oil. When the oil is hot, we're just going to add the lamb and brown it very quickly, just for a couple of minutes on each side. Then, when you've browned it on both sides for a couple of minutes, I'm just going to put it onto a plate out of the way for a moment while we fry the onions. You just want them to go a little bit soft, so it'll only take a couple of minutes. When they're done, we're going to get the pan that we're going to use to make the scouse and put that on the heat. To that, we're going to add the onions. We're going to add the meat and the juices. We're going to add the carrots. We're going to add the potatoes. I'm going to add a handful of pearl barley. A couple of sprinklings of mixed herbs. 2 bay leaves. I'm going to crumble in 3 lamb stock cubes. You can use beef or chicken. And then I'm just going to add boiling water till it just covers everything in the pan. Give it a gentle stir. Add salt and pepper. And then you want to bring it to the boil. When it's boiled, you want to put a lid on it and leave it to simmer for 2 hours. During the cooking process, the potatoes will break down a little, and what will happen is they will thicken this dish. So when it's cooked in about 2 hours, we'll come back and I'll show it you. So 2 hours later, just check to make sure that your meat is nice and tender. This is, it's falling apart. If not, just put the lid back on and simmer it for another half hour or so. Just keep checking it. So that is what we call in Liverpool a pan of scouse. Serve it with any sort of vegetables. I've put cauliflower and broccoli on there. And a real nice accompaniment to scouse is some pickled red cabbage or some crusty bread, whatever you prefer.
Our final recipe today is for lemon syllabub. Well, I had to put in a dessert somewhere, didn't I? A bit of a cheat, this syllabub, using ready-made lemon curd, but it's still delicious. You don't need to tell anyone. So for this syllabub, you will need 4 lemon shortbread biscuits, 110 mils, that's 4 fluid ounces, sweet vermouth, 250 mils, 9 fluid ounces, double cream, 4 tablespoons icing sugar, 8 tablespoons lemon curd, 2 tablespoons flaked almonds, toasted, 2 sprigs fresh mint, and...
this is what you do.
1. Crumble a biscuit into the bottom of each of 4 sundae glasses. 2. Drizzle over 1 tablespoon of sweet vermouth into each glass. 3. Pour the cream into a bowl and add the icing sugar. 4. Whisk the cream until soft peaks form. 5. Fold in the remaining sweet vermouth. 6. Add the lemon curd and lightly fold through, leaving a marbled effect. 7. Spoon the cream mixture into each of the glasses. 8. Top with the flaked almonds and fresh mint. If you would like to contact the programme with recipes, ideas you might have for the show, any queries you may have, cooking experience you'd like to share with other listeners, you can do so by emailing cooking@theglobalvoice.info. That's COOKIN at theglobalvoice.info. To download or to listen to this programme again, go to theglobalvoice.info/gallery, where you can also find archives of all What's Cooking shows. You can also go to incx.org, where you can subscribe to the What's Cooking podcast. That's all we have time for today, I'm afraid. I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as I have, and that you will join me next time. So until then, this is Sue Hadfield saying, look after yourselves and each other, and as always, happy cooking!